The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes. You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I don't know. How come they never say the hometown of Dr. Ray? I've asked them that a number of times. Very tired today. You'll notice it in my voice. Very, very tired. I had cleaned up, gotten ready to sit down, just kind of end the day around 8:30, 9 o'clock, you know, 2 hours past my bedtime. And I noticed that my hair looked really good. So I had to go out. Anywhere, somewhere, restaurant, coffee, anything. When you have your hair looking good, you can't waste it just sitting at home. Don't have that many good hair days left. So I went out and got it. Right now, it's not a good hair day because I slept on it last night. But you can't see that anyway. Good to have you with me. This is not Look Back Friday. This is Talk to You Friday, where you can call in, because a lot of folks have said, and we do this every so often, I've done it recently a couple of times, where we open up the phone lines. Some folks have said, via e-persons to me, I don't work on Friday, it's the one day that I can listen, so I'd like to call in, but I can't, because you're doing Look Back Friday, so I'm not looking back. I'm looking at you. Here's looking at you, kid, in the famous movie line. The number to get onto the program is 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call if you have a question about something in your life that matters. I'm a shrink. That's what I do for a living. By the way, we'll be heading, God willing, to Tontytown and Bentonville, Arkansas, Sunday night, Monday night, and South Lyon, Michigan tomorrow. So if you want information on that, just go to my website. The contact numbers are there, drray.com. If you are in the Michigan area, the Plymouth, Brighton, Ann Arbor area, you'd like to come to the St. Joseph Family Day Festival, get together, have some speakers there. I'm one of them. Love to see you there. Also, the Arkansas talks are on the website, so if you know details on those. All three of them are at parishes. All righty, so that's information there. I have often said that the experts just really don't like discipline as it has been traditionally understood. Consequences, follow through. They often pay lip service to it, but their idea of follow through with meaning consequences is fragile. At best, let me give you a prominent example. I used to do a lot of speaking to school districts, in-service days, teacher in-services. Interestingly enough, let me just digress for a moment. Sometimes I do 20 or 22 of those a year. And during the opening of schools, during certain in-services days, President's Days, those kinds of things, there were times that I had two, maybe three presentations to certified staff and in-house staff. So it was very common. I've done virtually none of those in the last probably 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Virtually none. They're dropped off to nothing. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. One is school money. They don't want to bring in outside speakers. But I think the big reason, I know I'm digressing, but I'll just give you some inside ball, is that if you go to my website, you will see that I'm so Bob Maria Radio, Catholic Media. You'll see that on the website. Immediately, these districts reject me. Carte blanche, no questions asked. Even though, the irony is, even though for years and years, or the explosion of websites. For years when I worked through speakers bureaus, I was still of the faith. I was still back in the church. I gave the talk, and I didn't talk about Jesus. I talked about being a good, strong teacher and being confident. It was a very popular talk. It was generally rated quite highly. Nothing has changed. Yes, when I speak to parishes or religious groups, we can talk freely about God, about Jesus, about morality set down by our Lord. But when you talk to a secular group, you don't do that. Okay, that's fine. But interestingly enough, they've essentially said, we want no part of you. We can't have any part of you. It's too risky. All right, that was a major digression. Back to it. There was a program, very, very popular in schools. I don't know if it's quite as popular. It may be. I haven't been in the schools for a while. It touted itself as a no-nonsense, back-to-basics discipline. That's right. None of this touchy-feely stuff. We're going to set up a system that these kids are going to know that there are consequences for certain behaviors. So the instructions were these. You list on the board your classroom rules. However, and here's the first fragility of discipline. Do not, again, notice the A here, do not list your rules in the negative. In other words, don't say, do not get out of seat. Don't speak out without raising your hand. Don't hit another child. See, those are all negatives. You can't phrase them that way. You got to phrase them in the positive. Remain in seat during class time. Raise hand to speak. Keep hands to self when around other children. You got to say them in a positive. All right. Okay. Instructions go on. If the child ignores, and I don't even know if they allow you to use breaks the rule. That might be a little too tough. If the child ignores the rules, he is to go up and put his or her name on the board. That's a warning. If the child, said child, breaks the rule a second time, he or she is to go up to the board and put a check mark next to the name. That check mark means there is now a consequence. And usually the consequences are pretty benign. Put your hair down at your desk for 5 minutes. You know, sit outside for 6 minutes on the curb before you're allowed to rejoin recess. Very, very benign type stuff. Okay. Now let us do the math on this very, very strict, back to no nonsense, basic discipline strategy for teachers. When I used to do the in-services, I would ask the teachers, average number of students in your class, let's say 20. How many school days legally? 180. All right. Do the math. What is 20 times 180? It's 3,600. That means if, now we're talking hypothetically now, it's not going to happen realistically, but hypothetically, this very, very strict system, if each child learned, figured out that they could misbehave one time per day and nothing would happen other than writing their name on the board. That was the consequence of writing your name on the board. Ooh, brutal. That teacher is operating under a system that would hypothetically, come on, Dr. Ray, it's not going to happen hypothetically. The kids are not going to do it. Hypothetically, the very strict system says that teacher could experience 1,600 breaking of his or her classroom rules without a consequence. Oh, Dr. Ray, come on. Lots of kids are not going to do that. It's usually a handful of kids that are going to go up there and put their name up and then put a check mark because they just don't want to do that. I know. I'm arguing the reality. I'm arguing what is built into the system. Built into the system is an allowable 3,600 breaking classroom rules over the course of a year, and the teacher could do nothing about it. That's what I mean when I say that so many of these strategies, methods, techniques, even those who tout themselves as back to discipline basics, are really pretty much on the bad side. Now, teachers can use them. Teachers like those approaches. And basically, because most kids don't figure it out. My son did. He came home one day. He said, "Dad, it's great. We've got this system. And if you do something wrong," I should have corrected him. "Andrew, wrong is a value judgment word." "Well, Dad, if you do something inappropriate," "That's better, Andrew. You can just put your name on the board and nothing happens." He knew it. Because he was older, though. He was 6. So it took him a while to figure it out. 877-573-7825. 877-57 equal.
All we are is dust in the wind, dude.
All the advice, none of the bills. Come in. The doctor is in.
Need a second opinion?
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Christianity never saw itself as the fulfillment of a political process or a military process. Christianity was always bearing witness to a kingdom ultimately not of this world. The church teaches in Catechism of the Catholic Church that the kingdom of God lies ahead of us. It is brought near in the Word incarnate. It is proclaimed throughout the whole gospel, and it has come in Christ's death and resurrection. The kingdom of God has been coming since the Last Supper, and in the Eucharist, it is in our midst. The kingdom will come in glory when Christ hands it over to his Father. What this tells us is that we are working for a kingdom. For us, the kingdom of heaven is synonymous with the kingdom of God. His kingdom is to be established by virtue of our union with him.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta. 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. My latest book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist, Listen to Him, talks about how Jesus was 2,000 years ahead of modern enlightened psychology. If he's God, he knows the absolute best way to live, whether psychology agrees or whether it doesn't. Go to AveMariaRadio.net to get your copy. Jesus will tell you the best way to live.
Well, more and more kids are just having to deal with this. This is so pervasive. It is such a result of so much confusion out there among kids. Eventually, I think we're going to have to face it. The social media fueled confusion, and more children in their early adolescence are having friends who are saying such things. And Lourdes from Jefferson City, Missouri, for calling.
Hello.
You're on the air, dear.
Hello.
Lourdes, you're there.
Hi.
I'm hearing you. Hi.
Okay.
How
are you? Oh. So, I have this friend at school, and we've been friends since the fourth grade. And over the summer,
she came out as bisexual, and she went to public middle school, and she made all these new friends, and she had this other friend who came out as lesbian, and I don't know what to do with it anymore.
Neither do I, Flordis, if it's any help and consolation to you. You might ask your friend, and this is sometimes a trajectory that happens. They come across someone who influences them, and developmentally, psychologists will agree on this, there's a lot of confusion in those pre-adolescent, adolescent years. There just is. We recognize this. We've known this for a long time. And when you have a culture that says, well, you know, this is a new social movement here. You're getting a lot of kids who are claiming this. There's research that says a heavy percentage of them, as they move through adolescence and the teen years, return to their normal sexual, can't use that word, to their birth sexual orientation. I would say to you, just ask your friend, how did you decide this? Were you thinking this before you went to public school and talked to a lot of people where it was very popular to say this? Did your friend influence? How did you come to this conclusion? Do you think that this is the way it will stay? Are you saying I don't want to have children in a family in the typical way? Is that what you're saying? In other words, help your friend to explore how he came to this conclusion, whether she was influenced by her peers, by social media. You can ask her, do you have a smartphone? Are you on social media a lot? Because there is now indication coming out that social media pushes very hard this idea that I may be bisexual, I may be trans, I may be homosexual. That is something that is there. You can't deny it. It's there. The argument that people say is, well, yeah, but it's not going to influence anybody who isn't predisposed in that direction. I'm not sure about that, and I think there's going to be research that indicates that. So, ask your friend, what is going on? What happened? How did it happen? Do you think it's related to you being in school? Do you think that, in fact, there's a lot of kids that think you're just really great because you came out this way? Because that does happen, by the way. My daughter worked at Wendy's for 8 years. There were 15 boys that worked there. She said to me, Daddy, 6 of those boys say that they are same-sex attracted. I said, Sari, that's 40%. 40%. Now, everything we know about biological predisposition, all the surveys that we've done say that the predisposition is somewhere around 1 to 3%. So when those boys at a 40% rate, these are teenage boys, are saying this, I think it's legitimate to ask the question, is something else socially going on? And I think, Lourdes, that is what you might want to explore with your friend.
Okay.
All right. Good luck there, honey.
Thank you.
All right. It has got to start becoming a factor to weigh into the number of children, especially young girls, who in their adolescent early teen years are having this kind of sexual proclamation. Eventually, it's going to come out. No pun intended. That there are social factors. There was even a study done by Brown University. We have to look at this. And you know what happened? It was taken out. It was squashed. It was stopped. Sometimes when you see what is censored, it should be even more questions. Brian from New York. Hi, Brian. Yo, Brian.
Hello?
Brian. You're there, buddy.
Yeah.
A little confusion. I'll tell you why. Because Ave Maria, they're running their pledge drive. And you're probably hearing their pledge drive when you're on hold on the phone. You're not hearing me. So that when I come in, it's a little confusing.
Is this Dr. Ray?
It is. It is me. And that's even more confusing when I start talking. Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Ray, for taking my call. I appreciate it. I'm really a big fan of your program. My name is Brian. I'm a 26, almost 27-year-old Catholic man. Single, never married, no kids, but looking to get married. So earlier this week on Tuesday, I actually met someone I thought might be the one for me maybe to marry someday while vacationing down south on a beach. And so we talked for a little bit, you know, about how we were both really attracted to each other, both wanted to get married and have kids, 2 to 3 kids. And, you know, I mentioned I was Catholic and she was Baptist, and how we both opposed premarital sex and cohabitation. And, you know, we started to get to know each other. And she stated that she was open to making a long distance relationship work since we're about 8 hours apart. And she was willing to meet me halfway on a monthly basis. I don't know, maybe I made a mistake by saying this, but I did tell her I loved her. And she said she was really ready to stay.
How long have you known her?
Oh, it was about maybe 4 hours. Yeah.
You told her you loved her after 4 hours.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
What were you basing it on?
Well,
had to be emotion. Had to be some kind of surging emotion.
It was partially emotion. It was partially. I mean, it was partially the fact that we both seemed like we're on the same page about what we wanted out of relationships. And
Brent, let me. I don't want to be a killjoy here, but how can you know that after 4 hours?
Well,
all you know is what she told you. You haven't seen it, and you haven't seen an interaction between the two of you over a period of time that would confirm it or disconfirm it. All you know is she said, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I agree with that. Oh, yeah, that's the way I think, too. Oh, my, we're soulmates. That's all you know. 4 hours.
Right.
So the first thing is, your question was how to make a long-distance relationship work. Mm-hmm. My first suggestion would be know her a whole lot better. And if that means seeing her in a wide range of situations, mm-hmm. talking to her about many, many things that matter to you most, keeping in mm-hmm. mind the problem is going to be you don't have ongoing close contact as if she lived nearby. So you could indeed share a lot of activities together and spend a whole lot of time together. You don't have that. So what you want to see is by its very nature basis. Now, not saying that can't work. I'm just saying it could take a whole lot longer and you have to keep your eyes a whole lot more wide open.
Right. Yeah. Gotcha. I guess I was wondering too, just like, I don't know if there's anything I should still try to say to her, reach out to her or whatnot. I mean, cause I tried that, you know, via text one time and, she didn't respond. So,
well, you probably scared the dickens out of her.
Yeah.
You scared the heck out of her by saying, I love you after 4 hours.
Yeah.
Because if she is what you thought, let's say you're accurate, that she really thinks like you do and she has her head on her shoulders and mm-hmm. and faith-filled, and you told her you love her, she probably is thinking, what's with this guy?
Yeah.
So you might want to correct that. You might want to say, you know, I said something. It was just a purely emotionally driven, and that obviously I understand. I can't say something like that until you really know someone.
So, like, how long do you think it usually takes to really get to know someone before that becomes appropriate?
There's no hard and fast rule, but I think there's a safe thing to say is mm-hmm. the farther apart you are, the longer it's going to take because you, by definition and practicality, do not have the contacts that you would otherwise have if she lived 3 miles away. Go slow, keep your eyes wide open, and try to do damage control with that I love you. 877-573-7825, 877-7-EQUAL. That's the number to call. Get on the program. We are wide open today. No look back Friday. So you can call and we can talk, and I would love to hear from you.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I often go back to my childhood. In church, we love to be reverent, to Christ present in the Eucharist, to Christ on the cross. But I was also impressed by the reverence of my friends in the Salvation Army. They had a little band. And I used to walk past the band on Sunday morning on my way to church. And I was just a child. But I said, you know, they're trying to pray to God. They're showing reverence to God. All this was reverence. Now what do I see? I hear one irreverence after another. And week after week, month after month, the media churns out things that make fun of religion in general and make fun of Christianity in particular, and particularly make fun of the Catholic Church. No class. Absolutely no class.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
How would you define the word beatitude? Webster's Dictionary defines beatitude as a state of utmost bliss and a declaration made in the Sermon on the Mount. The Catechism of the Catholic Church states that the Beatitudes are, in effect, a portrait of the man who declared them, Jesus Christ, depicting his countenance and portraying his charity. The Beatitudes also describe the attitudes and actions that should portray and depict his followers, true Christians. The Beatitudes are paradoxical in their promises. None seems more paradoxical than number 8, which proclaims, "Blessed are you when men revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven." The paradox is that God is present even amidst trials and tribulations. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
My people skills are just fine. It's my tolerance and mercy that need work. Dr. Ray, thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is not Look Back Friday. This is Talk to You Friday. Because every so often we just decide, indeed, to open up the lines. Because there are folks who say, please, 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 I can only get in on a Friday. Good enough. So let us go to a very common problem. Happens a lot. And from my understanding, the people who are asked, meaning most of the time priests, parish priests, or order priests, or maybe theologians, or lay people who understand the faith, disagree about it. And Marie from Florida is finding herself in that position. Hi, Marie.
Hi there, Dr. Wright. Thank you.
Sure. So, your sister says, my daughter is getting married out of the church and I ain't going.
That's correct. She lives overseas in the Netherlands, her daughter, and she's here in the U.S. and she's told her, I'm not going. And she's very upset, her daughter.
Well, does her daughter expect her to go to the Netherlands for this wedding?
Yes.
Mother has the ability and the money and the time to go do that?
Yes, but she says because of our faith, she's not going and she's not going to stand by her because her faith is very important to her.
Okay. So, the niece, I assume, has decided my faith isn't all that important to me. I'll get married however I want.
She left the Catholic faith when she was 18 and is very involved in her Christian denomination church.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's one way that Mom might be able to navigate this. She could ask her daughter, are you willing to send a letter to our bishop saying that you formally renounce your Catholic faith?
Okay.
If she does that, then as I understand it, she is no longer bound by Catholic teaching regarding marriage of Catholics in a mass, in a ceremony from the church. So that's one way. Other okay. thing is, if the daughter says, no, I'm not doing that. I don't have to do that. I don't have to answer to anybody, which she may very well say. Then at that point, mom is following her conscience. And her conscience is saying, well, you were raised Catholic. You are still Catholic by your baptism. However, you've decided to disobey the church's teaching on marriage as a sacrifice for us. So therefore, in good conscience, I can't witness it. I can't stand by it. I still love you. And of course, I'm not going to have ill will toward you or your spouse. However, for me personally, I can't do this. My conscience won't allow me. Now, I've heard priests come down on both sides of this issue. Some say a lot of it depends upon how much damage it would do to the very close relationship. Or they would say, no, you can't witness a marriage like this where the young adult is flagrantly simply saying, I don't care what the church says. I don't care how I was raised. I don't care the fact that I was baptized Catholic. I'm going to do what I want. So I've heard both perspectives. But if your sister says, no way, no how, I'm not doing it, then she has to be prepared to live with. I would guess, Marie, this is going to happen. Her daughter is going to be so ticked that she's probably going to shun her for quite a while. Wouldn't you think that'll happen, knowing the daughter?
Yes. Yes and no. My sister has two daughters. And the one that's getting married has a more noble heart. But the other daughter that's not getting married, she has already called me and told me if she doesn't go, she's not only going to lose her daughter that's getting married, she's also going to lose me.
See, that's bullying. That is just emotional bullying. That I know the way I am. That personally makes me angry. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me I'm not allowed to act according to my conscience. You may not like what I'm doing. You may totally disagree with it. But for you to tell me, if I don't do exactly what you want me to do, you're going to write me out of your life. What does that say about you?
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I'm getting older, but I'll tell you what, I have a much more visceral reaction to that kind of emotional blackmail, which is happening with a vaccine, by the way, and I was going to do a monologue on it. Maybe I will a little later. So given that, support your friend. Say, you know, you have to act according to your conscience. And if your okay. conscience is telling you this, then you got to do it. And hopefully your daughters, either one of them, will say, mom has a right to act according to her conscience. I don't agree with it. I don't like it. And I'm tempted to really personally like it's a slam on me because that's what they're doing. That is exactly what they're doing. That's a bratty move.
Okay.
So there. Now, can you tell how I think about this? Am I sugarcoating it? Am I being too delicate?
No, but you helped me. What I had told my sister before she told her daughter, I said, why don't you pray about it? Pray about it and just really think about it and pray about it and see, you know, what's right.
Well, she's got to act according to the dictates of her conscience. And if her conscience is well-formed and she comes down on the side of, I can't do this. I was put in a similar situation with my own daughter. Fortunately, they had their marriage blessed in the church, so that eliminated that potential problem for me. But she's got to decide. But here's one other thing to consider, Marie, and that is, when will she again do something according to her faith that her one daughter disagrees with and says, if you don't do this, I'm out of your life. If you don't get vaccinated, I'm out of your life. If you don't wear a mask here, I'm out of your life. When will that happen?
Yeah.
See, that tells you something a little bit about that daughter.
Yeah.
I do not allow you to believe what you believe. I don't allow it. And if you believe differently than me, I will write you off. What does that say about that child's thinking. And something tells me, too, this one willing to write her off, they may not have had the smoothest relationship up to now anyway. Is that safe to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. All righty, my dear. I'll talk to you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Hey, I'm Italian. I get intense. I get passionate. Doesn't mean I'm mad. My wife will say, Ray, you're coming off really intense. Yeah, probably. I was going to do a monologue today about the people willing to write parents and relatives off because they won't interpret the confusing research on the COVID response their way. Oh, my. All right. I'll be back, I think.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Now, when Jesus was on earth, he taught us a great lesson. He taught us that he came for the sinner, not the virtuous. He came for you because you are imperfect, because sin comes easy to you, and sometimes you don't have the willpower to say no. But you see, if you understood the awesomeness of God and all his power and all his wonder, and he comes down to our level. He wanted to feel. How do you feel? I don't know anybody that loves anyone that much. And this imperfect being, that's you and me and all of us, he did it for us. That's why you should never despair, because you're imperfect.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is the logic of Catholicism. Solanus Casey said, appreciation is as necessary for social order and harmony as are the laws of gravity for the physical world. St. John writes, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was made flesh and lived among us. John's referring, of course, to Jesus as the Word, which in Greek is logos, and that's where we get the concept of order, reason, and logic. People with Jesus could see, hear, and touch him. With their senses, they eventually reasoned that Jesus was the incarnation of God, who beforehand they had only known by faith. Thus, the incarnation unites faith and reason. Today, tell someone you appreciate Jesus, because he revealed how faith and reason together are, well, logical. And that's the logic of Catholicism. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
God made music for our total enjoyment. Why is music so universally liked? Now, people vary in their preference to what kind of music, but music itself is something that is inherent in the way we're wired. Peter Kraft made a wonderful observation. He had a CD out, said Seven Reasons Why I'm Catholic, and his seventh reason was Mozart. He said Mozart because of the absolute incredible beauty and the resonance within us of that music. Okay, Ray from Kentucky. I think this is Ray who's called before, is it not? Ray?
Please, I'm sorry, I can barely hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Hello.
Hello there, Ray.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I can hear you.
I'll talk louder.
Okay.
Go ahead. You had a point to make.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what happens to the whole thing of follow your conscience. Apparently, in our modern world, your conscience has to be dictated by someone else, and you have to follow what that someone else says. I was just listening to your previous call, and I'm with you. I'm kind of getting exercised about this whole thing. Now, do I think people should get the vaccine? Yeah. Do I think I should force my opinion on everybody else? Absolutely not. I have three adult children. Two of them strongly believe in the vaccine. One of them has serious questions and hasn't got vaccinated. There's one won't even hardly talk to the other one because he's not vaccinated and got all, got into an argument with him over it.
That is so sad. That is absolutely so sad. It's so narrow-minded. It is so unbelievable because there are people, whether you agree with them or not, who believe there are indications, some of the research would indicate this is at least questionable. The CDC has even come out and talked about more adverse reactions than any other vaccine and then all other vaccines combined. Now, granted, it is a very, very tiny percentage of the overall vaccinations. However, for someone who says, this is what I want to do with my body, and I would assume that the one daughter who even talked to him is very much a proponent of she could have an abortion because it's her body, her choice. But he's not allowed to have his body, his choice. So you're right. It's just pathetic. It's sad. I can't find enough words for it in how the media and politicians have whipped up such a horrid emotional frenzy with people turning on family members, eating them because of this. You're right. And the irony is, go ahead. I'll tone it down.
I think part of this, playing amateur psychologist, taking your role a minute.
Go ahead. You're allowed. I give you permission.
Okay. I think part of it comes from an area of insecurity, where I'm so insecure about my own beliefs that I have to force them on everybody else instead of saying, well, this is my belief, and if you don't want to believe, fine. I mean, I'm secure in what I did and why, and I researched it thoroughly and carefully, even though I got criticized for it. But when I see someone overreacting like this, I really question whether they really believe it or they're just acting on emotion instead of
they haven't decision. Two things have happened. They have not allowed the other person to interpret the data, which can be controversial, in the way that they wish.
Right.
That's one. The second thing is, yes, they're driven, I think, heavily by fear, because they believe that anybody who is unvaccinated is a threat, a terrible, terrible threat to their health or their living. I've seen this. An interesting thing. Okay, they're already talking now. They want to vaccinate kids 12 and up. One thing we know is that, for example, I've seen many grandparents not allowed to visit their adult children who have grandkids because you're not vaccinated or you're not going to wear a mask or whatever. And the rationale is, well, I want to protect my child. Interestingly enough, these statistics are coming in. They've been coming in that by far, the lowest risk group of ill effects of COVID are the kids. The younger, the less. It's interesting. And I want to say to these parents, I want to say, okay, I will respect the fact that you have shut your parents out of your life because you are afraid they will transmit something to your child, which is interesting, too, I'll digress for a second. This is one of the few viruses that you can now transmit without having symptoms. That's interesting, is it not? Okay, that said, I want to say, all right, I'll respect that. If you, in taking your risk calculation, do not put that child in a car, because that child has by far more of a chance of dying in a car than COVID. Do not let that child go swimming. Drowning among children is way higher than COVID. Don't let them ride a bike. Kids have all kinds of accidents on bikes. Don't do it. Do not send him to school or preschool, because he could pick up a virus or a bacterium that give him serious complications. You don't want a kid getting pneumonia. I mean, it makes no sense. If you look at the actual risk of a kid having ill effects from COVID, It is way down on the list on what is threatening to kids. But yet, I've seen it happen over and over and over again. The grandparents are told, don't come near here. You're not allowed to come here. Don't come over here. Grandparents are thinking, I have no symptoms. I'm not sick. There's nothing wrong with me. I just took my temperature. I'm fine. Or I've had COVID. I've got antibodies. Nope, not good enough. I've seen it over and over again. It is completely irrational. It shows you the power of media to twist the way people think. Thank you, Ray.
It doesn't follow the science.
It does. In many respects, it does not. It does not. All right, I'm Dr. Ray. I'll be back.
Tell your doctor about all your medical conditions, including immune system problems, or if you've had an organ transplant or lung, breathing, or liver problems.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
I feel better!
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up. Don't go anywhere.
Because I'm a doctor, that's how I know.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now, and I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him? That might be a hard conversation to have.
We need EWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Alrighty, good to have you with me on this Talk to You Friday, not Look Back Friday, with my friends there at Ann Arbor, working in cooperation with the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. It's a big one. 400 plus stations, and that big boomer in Chicago. Some of those folks in Chicago, it's great to have you. I probably should just go straight to the calls on this last segment. One other quick announcement. Let me grab my book here. I can give you specific details. On tomorrow in Southline, Michigan, I will be at St. Joseph's. They're having a nice little family celebration there. I'll be speaking at 3:30, I think I'm speaking. So if you want information on that, you call the parish or just go to my website. It's got the contact number. On the 19th and 20th, the Sunday and Monday, Tontytown on Sunday and Benton St. Stephen on Monday. If you want information on that, just go to my website, drray.com, and you look under Speak and Schedule. It'll tell you if you want to come in. We're going to go to Stacy from Raleigh, North Carolina. She has a question about a tough babysitting job. What? Just raise your rates, Stacy. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show, but my question is, I babysit for this mom who has one kid who is 1.5 years old, and I'm struggling on whether or not to keep the job because of the way the mom raises her kid. Because the kid really likes me, but it's just such a stressful gig, I don't really know what to do.
What makes it stressful?
Well, she says, the mom tells me when I babysit for the kid, I can't say no to the kid. I can't tell her no. I have to use, like, redirection, where it's like, oh, let's not touch that. Let's do this. And then I can't pick her up a lot. If she's throwing something hard, I'm supposed to just give her something soft to throw instead.
Oh, and yeah. Your mom has bought into all kinds of the new and enlightened ways of child rearing.
And I can't give her excessive praise either when she is good.
No, not allowed because, you know, it's interesting, Stacey. I wrote a book called Advice Worth Ignoring. It is 50 of the most common, and every single one of those that you just said is in that book, of the most common theoretical, quasi-enlightened notions of new and improved child rearing that is going to blow up in people's faces. I can't tell you what to do, but if it were me, I'd dump the job. Because clearly you're going to do something she's not going to like and she's going to fire you anyway.
Okay.
You are, in fact, when this child goes over with a scissors and tries to put it into an electrical socket, who will say, let's see, how should I say? I can't say no. I can't grab the scissors. Let's see. I'll try to find something soft that won't go into the... It's ridiculous. What I would say to you, Stacey, do you need the job, for heaven's sakes?
Well, not really. I just feel bad for the kid.
Well, if it's any consolation to you, my office is filled with parents who started out raising a kid this way, and then they come in when this kid is 4, 5, and 6, and they can't stand being around the kid. Because the kid is so difficult, defiant, and obnoxious. And they think it's the kid. And most of the time, it is their misguided discipline ideas. So,
okay, thank you.
You're welcome, dear. You're not going to rescue this kid. Mom's going to do what she wants to do. And, in fact, you can just tell her. Just simply say, I can't maintain the kind of order or direction that I would like to do, so it's best if you find somebody that fits better with your child-rearing philosophy.
Okay.
And then you say, call me in about 2 years when you're at your wit's end. You lose a lot of money if you drop the job?
Well, it's a nice steady income, but I think I'll manage without it.
I know, honey. So very, very much of this is now pervasive in modern enlightened parenting. And the irony is, it looks wonderful on paper. It looks so kind and nice on paper. It looks like the more sophisticated way to do it on paper. And I always tell parents, if it works for you, go for it. If you got a kid with a temperament that kind of just absorbs this and cooperates and flourishes, great, good for you. But if, in fact, it's a kid, kind of a normal kid, you're going to get frustrated. Not yet, kid's only 1.5. Wait at least three. And he throws something, smashes it against the wall, and she goes and gives him a pillow to throw. Yeah, but he already threw something and smashed it against the wall. He already broke something. No consequences for that. Just a heavier pillow. Good luck, Stacy. See if you can find a mom who really, truly wants your help.
Thank you, Dr. A.
You're welcome. I'll talk to you. I'll tell you, when I was 28 years old, this was way back, 1926, I was seeing this in the mental health center where I worked. These parents were coming in, and they were frustrated and upset, because they were just trying to be such good, good parents, and they were doing it all the new enlightened ways of the 70s and 80s, and like, oh, come on, this is, why am I so frustrated? Why do I not like my kid? And I wrote the book, You're a Better Parent Than You Think. And apparently, talked about authority and self-confidence and how it's being undercut by all the new and enlightened notions. Idiot. I was no one, as an author goes. But apparently it resonated with the people in New York. Because that was my first book. And it came out of nowhere. You know, I was told by everybody, you're not going to get a book published if you've never done anything. Well, I must have touched a nerve. Hey, I got to go. Thanks so much for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Good Lord, commitment. I'll see you Monday. Walk with God through the weekend and all the way to the end of your life.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.